Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
I cannot tell you, Joy, the number of individuals who've come up to me crying because they are concerned about our government, who are concerned about being deported for doing absolutely nothing. Individuals who have been in this country and who have contributed to our economy, individuals who work each and every day, who know no other country but the United States, individuals that are fleeing dangerous situations, fleeing violence in their country, who only come here because they want the same thing that you and I want, and that is to make sure that our family is safe and to contribute to these United States. And it's unfortunate that I have to hold countless number of individuals in my arms crying because we have a government right now that is reckless.
Well, that reckless government really put us into the position that we're in right now, wouldn't you think? The idea that reckless government would throw open our southern border. Letitia James there, not missing a moment to politicize this and sensationalize it for her own, as she probably perceives it, political gain. Let's get DeRoy Murdoch on the phone here with us, nationally syndicated columnist, Project 21 ambassador, and Fox News contributor. DeRoy, welcome back. It's good to have you.
It's great to be with you again, Annie.
We've been able to consume a little over a week now of Donald Trump's administration and his commitment, his promise to voters, should they choose to vote for him, to secure the southern border, is in full swing. What do you feel about his actions that he and Tom Homan and the border security plan that they've been able to do so far?
Well, I'm very supportive of what they're trying to do. I'm delighted that they're moving so quickly. So many other leaders would have a blue ribbon panel and an interagency task force and hold a study, and maybe after 6 months they'd start to do something. A week and a day, 8 days since Donald J. Trump returned to the White House, and the deportations are going full swing. The ICE raids, I think, began his first day in office, or maybe day two, or maybe that night when he got sworn in, and they're not slowing down. They've already gone into Chicago, I believe Boston. They were in New York City just last night, and that was with the assistance of Kristi Noem, our new Homeland Security Secretary. And they're moving full speed ahead to deliver on the exact promises that Donald J. Trump made, which is he'd come in and take illegal aliens who've broken into our country who don't belong here, and start with the violent ones, the worst first, as I think they put it, and get them out of this country and send them back home so they can stop making life miserable for American citizens. So it's a great thing. It's great to see it happening, unfolding with so robustly and so quickly.
Yeah, and I think that there are a lot of people right now who believe that this is just incredibly emotional. They're emotionally wrought over this. They feel as though it's very bad, that these are all good, innocent people who are here, and the compassion in the heart of America is to welcome these people. And you've been saying this on this show. We've had many people saying this on the show for all 4 years that Joe Biden was in, that opening your doors to people to just flood in is not the same as American compassion. And we're in this place right now. And it is, I do believe there's going to be very sad images that we see coming in the future here as people who came here illegally are removed from the country. It's important to remember how they got here and why they got here. Why do you think it is the Democrats, the Biden administration, and whoever was behind it was so eager to open those doors on our border and let people flood in?
Yeah, I mean, we got during the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris years, we got roughly 10 million people marching across the border, invading this country without passports, without visas, foreign invaders, what they were. And these people, some of them came in here up here because they want to work and be productive. Others came up here because they see it as a great opportunity to rape and pillage and rob from us, assault people, bring in guns, bring in drugs, bring in fentanyl, which kills about 70,000 Americans per year. Some of them came in and operated and probably still operate sex slavery operations, slavery, and these were deliberately and advisory slavery operations where people are required to make garments and engage in manual labor for no pay. And if they try to leave, they get, you know, beaten or maybe even killed. That's called slavery. This, you know, people think it stopped in 1865. Well, guess what? It's alive and well in this country right now. Hopefully Donald J. Trump and Tom Homan will put an end to it. But I think the reason they brought these people in is they hoped that they would start voting Democrat, and I guess they thought that other Hispanics here in this country would be impressed by this and say, oh, this is great. They're helping out our Hispanic brothers and sisters, and they would be even more loyal to the Democrat Party. In fact, it boomeranged in their faces. A lot of Hispanics who came here legally, or maybe their parents did, or grandparents, or parents like my case, my mom and dad came from Costa Rica, and we are not impressed. We don't like people coming in and breaking into our country. We don't like people from Latin America and elsewhere coming in and engaging in assault and child molestation and homicide and terrorism and so forth. And it blew up in the Democrats' faces. Their Hispanic support dropped. And one of the reasons that Donald J. Trump is in the White House is he attracted such a large number of Hispanic votes who otherwise would have gone Democrat. So this little experiment in expanding the trying to expand the number of Democrat voters exploded in the Democrats' faces. And now they're paying a huge price for it, which is not being in power anymore.
Yeah, that's very accurate. We're speaking with DeRoy Murdoch, nationally syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor, and Project 21 ambassador. I think that, like, leading up until this moment, because now we get to see all action. We don't need to, you know, persuade anyone to see our side any longer. The campaign is over. Donald Trump is the president, and he was very clear about what he was going to do when he got elected. And it's somewhat refreshing to see such quick action on the promises that he made to the electorate should he be chosen to be the president. Outside of border security, getting the border back secure, I think we do need to look at our immigration system. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts specifically about how the immigration system is set up and how we go from removing the people who came here illegally and then reinvigorating the immigration legal system, just, you know, like your parents benefited from.
Sure. Well, I think the first thing to do is to get the bad guys out. And we're talking about some very bad people. You played that audio clip of Tricia James, my delightful attorney general here in New York, you know, crying, oh, these poor people, and oh, they're suffering and all that. Just in the last couple of days, they arrested one guy who's a Dominican prisoner. He was paroled after doing just 17 years of a life sentence. You know, got a life sentence for prison, but he's out after 17 years. And his crime was beating to death his pregnant wife in front of his five-year-old child. Okay, so that's not a very nice thing to do. If you're for women, that doesn't really count as pro-female behavior. So he was arrested by ICE, and I guess they're going to boot him out of the country. They also got a guy named Anderson Zambrano Pacheco, and this guy is a Tren de Aragua member, apparently one of the ringleaders of the group, and he was running around the Bronx just last night or yesterday, running around trying to buy hand grenades. Hand grenades, Annie. Who buys hand grenades? Why does he need a hand grenade? So, you know, these are dangerous people. Once we get them out of there, we got to figure out what to do with the other people who broke into this country, who also are criminals, maybe not violent criminals, but you break in without passport and visa and our permission, then you're a criminal and you ought to be out of here. And as for the existing or the legal immigration system, I think we ought to go back to what we did before, which is if you want to come to this country, great. Go to the U.S. Embassy in your country, fill out a visa application, and when we have time and availability for you to come, we'll let you know. And until then, stay home. And if you do come here, I think it's perfectly appropriate to say we're looking for people who've got skills, people who add to the American economy. I'm very comfortable having an increase in the number of H-1B visas and that sort of thing, especially for people who study in this country and get, you know, get MBAs and PhDs in chemistry or engineering or STEM or whatever. Very often these people get kicked out of this country. I got a friend of mine who has a degree in data science, that sort of thing. He is within 2 weeks. He's from Western Europe, wants nothing more than to be an American. He loves this country. He's more patriotic than a lot of Americans I know, even though he's a European. And if he does not find a job within 2 weeks, he has to get on a plane to get out of here. And he's done everything the right way. He's come in legally. He's filled out all the paperwork, came in with a visa. You know, he's dealing with ICE all the time and updating all of his forms and whatnot. And he has a graduate degree in data science. He can be very helpful to this country. And if he doesn't find a job here within 2 weeks, he has to leave. And if he does, he'll go back to Europe and maybe join a European country or a company and start competing with us. How stupid is that? You know, he should have gotten a green card with his master's degree and he could be now working for Microsoft or Amazon or ChatGPT or whatever it is, building up those companies, making them stronger, and building the U.S. economy, and then I assume within another 4 or 5 years becoming an American citizen. He wants nothing in life more than that. And despite that, he's just had to go, jump through one flaming hoop after another. And like I say, he's got about 15, 16 days to go before he either hopefully gets a job, or if not, he's got to go to the airport and fly home. And who knows if we'll ever see him again. And that's a real shame.
Yeah. I mean, the whole system and the whole situation is incredibly complex. It's complicated. I sometimes feel like as though it's been made intentionally to be so. As you and I are having this conversation right now, Donald Trump is speaking on the signing of the Lake and Riley Act. I mean, when I'm talking to people in my life personally who are hurt by what they're seeing, I think Lake and Riley's name is an important name to say today and each day that we're watching this happen. We need to have no more Lake and Riley acts where we have to name these types of things after these poor innocent lives that have been lost.
I completely agree with you. And the reason Lincoln Riley was killed, unfortunately, is there was an illegal alien, I believe here in New York, who was arrested. He came in under Biden, and he was arrested for shoplifting or robbery or something like that. Alvin Bragg, the soft on crime DA, quote-unquote prosecutor, I put that in quotes, here in New York City, let him go. And so he was free to go down to Georgia and track down Lincoln Riley, as far as we can tell, rape her and then take a rock and beat her head in until she was dead. If he had been kept out of this country by Joe Biden or locked up for robbery by Alvin Bragg, Lincoln Riley right now would probably be sitting in class. I believe she's a nursing student, learning how to take care of people, make them healthier, maybe studying for some quizzes or in the library doing research. And instead, she's in a casket somewhere, I assume 6 feet under the soil of the state of Georgia. Absolutely disgusting. And these are the serious, deadly consequences of having the border wide open and letting people come into this country and run rampantly as they rob, assault, rape, and kill American people, the American people. I'm glad that Donald J. Trump is there to put a stop to it. And things like the Lake and Riley Act, I hope it's the last one like that that needs to be signed. And with any luck, this situation will be turned around. And people who come to this country do so because they want to make this a better country and improve their lives, improve the lives of us American citizens, rather than come up here to rape and kill us.
Wow. Amen and well said. Jory Murdoch, thank you for being with us here today. It's good to be on this side of the Trump administration, but there is certainly a lot of work to do. So we appreciate
you. No doubt.
Thank you.
Very good. All right, Annie. Great talk to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. President Trump is speaking right now from the White House. We can listen in and hear as he is discussing the signing of the Laken Riley Act. Let's listen in.
They must meet a high standard. They're representing our government. They're representing our country. If they don't agree by February 6th to show up back to work in their office, they will be terminated and we will therefore be downscaling our government, which is something that the last 10 presidents have tried very hard to do but failed. Most of the people we're talking about have not been going to their federal offices in many, many years, from even before COVID. But they have nevertheless been paid. Some have worked, some haven't worked, and most of the studies say that some have just gone through the motions. We may ask these people to prove that they didn't have another job during their so-called employment with the United States of America, because if they did, that would be unlawful, as you understand. A lot of people are getting paychecks, but they're actually working other jobs. So they'll have to prove that to us, that they weren't. In any event, we're requiring them to show up to work or be terminated. We think a very substantial number of people will not show up to work, and therefore our government will get smaller and more efficient. And that's what we've been looking to do for many, many decades, frankly. In addition, there was a short-term pause or funding freeze on certain discretionary spending payments, such as government grants, only for us to quickly look at the scams, dishonesty, waste, and abuse that's taken place in our government for too long. As was explicitly stated, this in no way affected Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, or other entitlements that Americans depend on. I've made abundantly clear from the very first day that I ran from office, that was a long time ago now, that's 2015. If you think about it, I announced in 2015 and we won in 2016. We did very well in 2020, but we did really well just recently. And I'm restating right now to correct any confusion that the media has purposely and somehow for whatever reason created. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid have not been affected by any action we're taking in any way, shape, or form. We are merely looking at parts of the big bureaucracy where there has been tremendous waste and fraud and abuse. In that process, we identified and stopped $50 million being sent to Gaza to buy condoms for Hamas. 50 million. And you know what's happened to them? They've used them as a method of making bombs. How about that? We stopped an attempt to make an illicit payment for illegal alien resettlement. We canceled $181 million in DEI training contracts. This is just for the training of people in DEI, which has been terminated and completely terminated. And we paused $1.7 billion in unauthorized payments to foreign organizations, including stopping more than $40 million that was on its way out the door to the very corrupt World Health Organization, which has not done its job and not done it properly. We also... We also blocked $45 million for diversity scholarships in Burma. 45, that's a lot of money for diversity scholarships in Burma. You can imagine where that money went. These were the types of payments and many others. I could stand here all day and tell you things that we found, and we have to find them quickly because we want the money to flow to proper places. But these were the payments and types of payments affected by the temporary freeze, and the American people strongly support these efforts. I talked about it during the campaign, and they voted for us in record numbers. Every single day, we're now putting America first and fighting to get the most out of every single tax dollar for our great citizens. We've gathered this afternoon to take another historic action, however. In a few moments, the Laken-Riley Act will become the very first bill that I proudly sign into law as the 47th President of the United States. Laken was a brilliant and beautiful 22-year-old nursing student from Georgia. The best in her class. She was always the best. They would say, Laken, how do you do this? And what do you do? They were always asking her questions. She was respected by everybody, even her teachers. They respected her so much. From the time she was in first grade, Laken knew she wanted to spend her time caring for others. That's what she did. To her friends and classmates, she was a light of warmth and kindness in every single room. To her parents and family, she was everything in the world. They've had a miserable period of time. Just after 9 a.m. last February 22nd, Laken went out for a jog on the campus of the University of Georgia, but she was just never returned. She never came back, did she? Huh? Parents are here, sister, all of her relatives. While on her run, Laken was attacked, viciously assaulted, beaten, brutalized, and murdered by an illegal alien gang member who was set loose into our country by the last administration. We are deeply honored to be joined today by Laken's parents, Allison and John, and her sister, Lauren. Thank you very much. So sad. We were together right after that happened, and it's a tremendous tribute to your daughter, what's taking place today. That's all I can say, but it's so sad we have to be doing it at all. Thank you very much for being here. To Laken's family, we will keep Laken's memory alive in our hearts forever, everyone's hearts. With today's action, her name will also live forever in the laws of our country. And this is a very important law. This is something that has brought Democrats and Republicans together. That's not easy to do. Laken did it. Laken did it. America will never, ever forget Laken Hope Riley. the vicious criminal who murdered Precious Lakin was an illegal alien member of the barbaric Venezuelan prison gang known as Tren de Aragua. He trespassed across our southern border in 2022 and was apprehended by Border Patrol, but under the cruel policies of the last administration, instead of being deported as he should have been, he was released into the United States, as were millions of other people, many of them very dangerous people. And you see what we're doing, we're getting the hell out of here. He was soon arrested again in New York City on charges of endangering a child, but because of New York City's deadly sanctuary policies, as we have in California and many other places, which we're ending, we're going to end them, he was released again to reoffend. The Biden administration then provided this illegal alien criminal with a free, taxpayer-funded flight from New York to Georgia, where he was arrested yet again. Constantly, this time for stealing from a Walmart along with his gang member brother, who was a bad one. Only after being released a third time by the U.S. law enforcement did this cold-blooded criminal go out in that fateful morning hunting for women on whom to prey. That's what he did. He hunted. It was like a hunter. I'm going to show him who the hunter is. This horrific atrocity should never have been allowed to happen. And as president, I'm fighting every single day to ensure that such a tragedy never happens again. We don't want this to happen. And under the law, thank you. Under the law I'm signing today, the Department of Homeland Security will be required to detain all illegal aliens who have been arrested for theft, burglary, larceny, shoplifting, assaulting a police officer, murder, or any crime that results in death or serious injury. In addition, for the first time ever, this act gives state governments the ability to sue the federal government for immediate injunctive relief if any future administration ever again refuses to enforce the immigration laws of the United States, like happened for 4 long years. And that was happening for 4 long years, frightful years. Amazing. You'd say, how can people do this? How can they allow this to happen? How can they allow criminals to pour into our country and then try and defend it? And they're still trying to defend it, but they can't. That's why I'm here instead of somebody else, actually. It's the biggest reason. I believe it's the single biggest reason. Inflation was horrible. Many things were horrible during that administration. When you look at what took place in Afghanistan, the way they got out, not that they got out, but the way so many things were horrible. But to me, this was the worst of all. It's a landmark law that we're doing today. It's going to save countless innocent American lives. I want to thank every House Republican, every Senate Republican, as well as the 12 Senate Democrats and the 48 House Democrats who voted to pass this vitally important bill. And many of them are with us today, and I really do appreciate it. And I very much especially appreciate the bipartisan support. The Democrats, really a big percentage of them came through, and plenty of them wanted to. They probably felt they couldn't, but they really wanted to. That they don't understand that would have made them a lot more popular, would have made them a lot better with their people. The ones that didn't are going to be, they're going to be sorry, because the people are not going to forget that they wouldn't sign. This is a perfect, incredible tribute to an unbelievable young lady. We're joined today by many great supporters of our new strong border policies, and they are indeed strong, including
President Trump speaking from the White House right now as they are commemorating the signing of the Lakin Riley Act. Just one more measure in the list of efforts that this administration is doing to secure our southern border and to keep the Lakin Rileys of the United States of America safe. And, you know, I've heard this from the family. I've heard this from people who are honoring her. It's like, we shouldn't even know Lakin Riley's name. It's a tragedy that we do. But today we're putting it into a bill, into law, to protect the future Lake and Rileys to keep their names off of bills like this. So President Trump signing that today from the White House. We're going to take a quick break. Corey DeAngelis back on the Annie Fry Show with us. He's a senior fellow at the American Culture Project. He is also the adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute. And we're going to talk to him about school choice. He is a champion for school choice. As you know, this week it is National School Choice Week, and we are celebrating National Lutheran Schools Week with our friends at the Lutheran Elementary School Association in an attempt to raise $15,000 to establish a scholarship to help local kids have the choice of where they want to go to a school, should it be a Lutheran school. If you could please come help us. We need every dollar that we can get. Lisa, LESASTL.org/Annie. I want to give a thanks out to Home Shield Foundation Repair. Heard us talking with Mark Cox this morning and said, all my kids went to Messiah Lutheran in Weldon Spring. God bless you and your work. Well, God bless you as well. Home Shield Foundation Repair, thank you for your donation. If you're interested in making one yourself, Lisa with an E, STL.org/Annie. We're going to be right back with Corey DeAngelis.
Well, America's 2024 report card is out, and the new data offers cause for hope, but a lot of concern, too. So the good news is in math, students held steady or even made up some ground lost during the pandemic. But there's bad news, and its reading scores are still dropping. Not one state improved their eighth grade reading score.
Come on.
Overall, most students are still performing below 2019 levels.
Well, Dana Perino giving us a little bit of an education on the state of education in our country right now. And I have to say, there are a lot of places where you're like, well, that's just the school I have to go to. It's failing. What are you going to do about it? School choice, that's what you can do about it. Push for school choice in your state, in your communities. And we are doing that this week in our partnership with the Lutheran Elementary School Association to establish a scholarship to help benefit local kids. Lisa with an E, LESASTL.org. /Annie. We're working to get to $15,000. I'll give you an updated amount. We're about halfway there. So please come join us at that website. The champion for school choice, Corey DeAngelis, is back with us once again. Senior fellow at the American Culture Project, adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute. It's so great to have you back here, Corey. Thank you, especially this week while we are focused on celebrating the idea of school choice.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Annie.
So talk to me about, you know, we're in a different administration right now. It's kind of like a whole new world. I'm very interested to see what the hearing happens when we have the Secretary of Education nomination being discussed. We're not quite there yet. Are we closer to having school choice in our country today than we were maybe a few years ago?
Well, we certainly are at the state level. We've had 12 states go all in on school choice in the past 4 years. Past 4 years, we've had more advancement on school choice than in the preceding four decades. We're winning so much, I'm almost getting tired of winning. But there's also some good news at the federal level, too. The cabinet selection of Linda McMahon, she's a big proponent of school choice. I hope she body slams that unconstitutional Department of Education once and for all, or at least maybe gives it death by a thousand cuts. Trump has campaigned on sending education back to the states in the form of block grants. Give that money back to localities. You'll have more local control. The states can spend the money on education as they see fit. And when it comes to school choice, this is a really good day to talk about. It is National School Choice Week. Congress just reintroduced, or at least Republican lawmakers introduced, a nationwide school choice bill in Congress today, this morning, actually. It's backed by Speaker Mike Johnson. President Trump said he would sign the bill. It's called the Educational Choice for Children Act. It's a federal tax credit, so you're getting to keep more of your own private dollars, using that for K-12 education expenses instead of giving it over to the government in the first place. And it's neither run nor regulated by the Department of Education, so you could do both. You can abolish the department while also expanding school choice, supercharging the initiatives that are already happening in red states, while also expanding opportunities to families who happen to live in blue states that are controlled by the teachers' unions.
Well, I live in Illinois, so I understand what that's like. We're speaking with Corey DeAngelis right now about school choice and its progress so far. So you're talking about eliminating the Department of Education. I think we could be closer to that than we have been. I don't know in my lifetime when it would have been closer than right now. What are the proponents of the Department of Education going to say about a movement like that?
Well, we're going to lose our jobs. That's all they're concerned about. They don't care about the kids. I mean, the Department of Ed was created supposedly as a way to to stop achievement gaps from widening. That hasn't happened. We've spent about $2 trillion at the federal level since its inception. It was actually created in 1979 as a payoff by Jimmy Carter to the teachers unions, the NEA. He wanted to get their endorsement. And outcomes have actually gotten worse. We now spend about $20,000 per kid per year in the government schools. That's about 52% higher than average private school tuition. And the private schools are doing a lot better at a fraction of the cost. They were open during COVID while the government schools were closed. They held children's education hostage as long as possible, but that woke parents up like we've never seen before. Parents saw the garbage that was included in too many classrooms through remote learning, which we really should have just called it remotely learning. As was mentioned by Dana Perino earlier, the nation's report card scores came out just last night at midnight, showing actually since 2019, a 5-point decline in reading for fourth and eighth graders and a 3 to 8 point decline since 2019 in math for fourth to eighth graders respectively. So, and that's after we spent $190 billion in extra federal COVID relief that was really wasted on the schools. They just hired more people. It's become more of a jobs program for adults than an education initiative for kids.
Yeah, and that's the upside down. That's the upside down system of big government. It serves itself. It doesn't serve the actual purpose that it's being sold to the American people by. I've got a comment here from a listener, Christopher, who says that when he's talking with his relatives, the teachers, we all have teachers in our lives. I'm married to a public school teacher myself, so we have these conversations, and I do like to listen to what they have to say because, generally speaking, what the teacher thinks will differ than what the teachers' unions and these organizations will think. It's very nice to be able to have those conversations. But Christopher is saying, what about special needs programs and things associated with those special programs? If you get rid of the Department of Education, do we just stop helping kids who don't learn the same way and we don't have these programs any longer?
Yeah. First, I'd like to clarify that the jobs I'm talking about being extinguished would not be the individual teachers at the state level. I'm talking about the jobs at the Department of Education. They employ over 4,000 people right now, paper pushers, useless bureaucrats in D.C. That money wouldn't just vanish. It would actually mean more money for education going back to the states. There's a bill to do just that right now in Congress. It's called the Returning Education to the States Act. It's proposed by Senator Mike Rounds out of South Dakota. And what would happen is if you have special needs students, that law would remain intact. It would move under the Department of Health and Human Services. Any civil rights protections would move under the Department of Justice. And the funding that we're talking about in the form of block grants would be transitioned to the Department of Treasury, which would go back to the states to spend as they see fit on education. You'd actually have more money for education because you wouldn't be wasting it on all these people doing a bunch of nothing in D.C.
And also, you know, we've had this conversation before, Corey, but we have a system that kind of perpetuates this march of teachers through the system, but it doesn't necessarily look at the qualifications of the teachers, the exceptional nature of some teachers, the failing nature of some teachers, and really surround the students that are sitting in these desks in these classrooms with the very best teachers that are out there. To me, it seems like a school choice situation where people are getting to choose the education that is certainly the best for their child, that even monetarily, this would still help teachers get paid what they deserve.
Exactly. And the best teachers right now, what are they doing? They're leaving the government school system because they see better opportunities elsewhere. There's no such thing as merit pay in the public schools. The unions fight tooth and nail against any type of pay for performance. And so the teachers who's doing a good job looks across the hallway and says, this person's earning more than me. And they're just showing videos every day just because they've been here longer than me. That's not fair to the teachers. So when you have competition, you also have more of that money that's involved in the public schools right now. Instead of going towards administrative bloat and people like Randy Weingarten, who make over $500,000 a year, it goes to the classroom with competition because in the current system, if you look at the money, since 1970, we've increased funding per student by about 164%, even after adjusting for inflation. Teacher salaries have been flat over the same period. They've only gone up by 3% in real terms. So I kind of feel for the teachers who complain about having to pay out of pocket for supplies each year. But the problem isn't with their competition in the form of private and charter schools. The problem is that their employer is a monopoly that has no incentive to spend money wisely. Real quick, since 2000, the number of students in the system has only increased by about 5%, but the number of administrators in the system has increased by a whopping 95%, 19 times the rate of enrollment increase. It's an insane bureaucratic blob that needs to be reformed for the kids, obviously, but also the teachers who are getting the short end of the stick, too.
Well, I always appreciate your willingness to bring the spotlight directly where it needs to be. And school choice being celebrated this week. If people haven't already, they should follow you on X at DeAngelis Corey, because you're always pushing this stuff out there as soon as it's there's news, just like you were listing today. There's great things to talk about, but the work is just beginning. And it's nice to be in a climate right now where we might actually see some of this come to fruition.
That's right. And Trump just today, he's expected to announce an executive order to direct the Department of Education to find any way it can to expand school choice. So this is a great news coming from the top.
Awesome. Corey DeAngelis, thank you for the time today. It's good to have you back.
Thanks, Annie. Good talking to you always.
Yep, you as well. Happy National School Choice Week. It's National Lutheran School Week here on the Annie Fry Show. And I have an update from... it's like maybe 30 minutes ago. And I said we needed to get to $7,000 by 1 o'clock, and we did. We are at, I think it's $7,338 is the update I got about 30 minutes ago. So we're very close to meeting our halfway point for our $15,000 goal. You've got 15 minutes to get us to $9,000, which is outrageous. That would be, I'd fall off my chair. Ryan said he's going to dress like me. This might have been a bad idea. I might have not thought this out all the way. It's Spirit Week here, so we're dressing like our coworkers. I'm dressed like Brad. Brad's going to dress like Ethan. Ethan's going to dress like Ryan, and Ryan is going to dress like me. At 2 o'clock, we're going to have a reveal, and he said that if we got to $9,000, that he would wear lipstick like I wear. And I did get a list of comments from donors, and I got one I'll just highlight here from George, and it's in all caps, "For the lipstick." So it did do some good. I think maybe the biggest win here for Ryan is if we come in at, you know, like $8,900 right at 2 o'clock, he gets off scot-free and we get pretty close to that $9,000 mark. If you are able to, please consider a donation. Small, big, it doesn't matter. Whatever you can afford. LESASTL.org/Annie as we march towards our goal of $15,000. It's a very tall order, but we're excited to take on that opportunity to do it. So let's take a quick break. We'll get Ryan back in here. Ask him how he's feeling. I think he's safe. I told him when I set that goal at $9,000, I'm like, that's not going to happen. And he's like, okay, fine. But he only said the top lip. So we'll see. Ryan Wiggins back in studio in a minute.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
Chuck Schumer from Capitol Hill today. That is real. That's not AI. I kind of wish it were.
You know what's so funny about that after watching it now for the 15th or 16th time?
I think it's pretty obvious.
That, well, the part where he says people are aroused, that's the funny part. But also, the people around him look the exact opposite of even interested.
Yeah.
They're just standing there with sourpuss faces like, I'm a staffer.
I'm a staffer. Our scholarship's up to 7,756.
All right, good news.
A little bit short of the 9,000 to get you to wear lipstick by 2 o'clock.
But not short of the 9,000 that we could still hit by 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
lipstick And that's free. The important thing, really.
Will you wear lipstick if we get it by 3?
At home.
That's no different.
Well, and I won't take any pictures, but I will do it, and I'll tell you about it.
Like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. kind of what I had in mind.
Man, I'm glad I called that guy. A couple notes here from people who have donated to our scholarship fund. We're doing it this week. After this week, it's over. Please help us get to our goal. The sooner you help us get to our goal, then we can stop talking about this. LESASTL.org/Annie. I mentioned Home Shield Foundation Repair, great sponsor of Mark Cox in the morning. And he heard me talking with Mark this morning and was very kind and generous this morning with that. So if you want a shout out, leave a comment when you leave your donation, and I will give you that shout out. Eddie said, great cause, Annie. Jennifer said, thank you for your commitment to school choice and advocating for Lutheran schools. George, I read this one before, said, in all caps, for the lipstick!
I heard that.
Yeah. Richard said, grateful for all Christian education, and I echo that as well. James said, God bless you folks. You are a source of light in a very dark world. Brent said, granddaughter graduated from Mel's. That's Metro East Lutheran High School. Played soccer and volleyball. She met her boyfriend and made great friends, now attending Colorado State. Vicky said, hope you hit your goal, Annie. Gary wrote, both of our kids attended Lutheran schools K through 12, Emmanuel and Lutheran High School St. Charles. I've been there many times. Our daughter graduated from Concordia Seward and married a pastor. Our son breezed through college and graduated with a bachelor's and an MBA in 4 years. Great investment in your children's future. Robert said, glad to help. Janet said, thank you, Annie. This is great. This is for a great education. My grandson attends a Lutheran school, and I am so pleased with the education he is receiving. And John said, keep up the good work. That's definitely something that I encounter a lot out and about when people talk to me about listening to the show. Usually they're like, quietly want to say that's something nice about Ryan Wiggins. That's first. But they don't want people to know.
They want to do it very quietly.
It's almost like they haven't come to grips with
it. Like, can you turn the fan on? I want to whisper something.
I just need a little background noise. Another thing they talk about is they're grateful for that we talk about our faith, our Christian faith. And many times I hear from people who have grandchildren who are going to Christian schools, Catholic schools, Lutheran schools, non-denominational Christian schools. And you just talk about how important it is to have that foundation at that age. And this scholarship is helping make it possible for those who may not be able to afford it. And I've said this before, it's way more affordable than you would think it is. I can openly say that last year I sent 3 kids to a Lutheran grade school for less than $10,000, which is, I think, surprising to people to think that it would be 3 kids at that amount. So, but every school is different. The way every Lutheran school and the church that usually it's connected to, or churches, they all handle it differently. So there are opportunities out there for you to access if you're interested in that Lutheran education. But if you are in a position to donate $25 to this cause or $2,500 to this cause before two, then Ryan will have to wear lipstick. That's
I'll do it. But I also just this
you're lucky
cause
I don't have like $1,300 laying around right now.
Yeah, you would just do. I actually thought you might do that.
Well, if it gets close, it's not close enough yet. But if it gets close,
but all that grant money stays in St. Louis. You're sending kids here in our area to a Christian education who would not otherwise be able to do it, which is a great cause.
I mean, now more than ever, the idea of being able to. The thought of being able to have those most foundational elements that you need to have when you're out on your own, when your kids are independent, making sure that they are established and you know, watered throughout the course of a child's life, getting them into Christian school is a great way to do that.
Yeah, it really is.
And you send your children to a Christian school.
I do.
Just a different.
It's funny how many people, when you talk about this subject, if they're not invested in it, it just is like, oh, okay. But the minute you talk to somebody who knows, oh, that's important, man, it's like you connect, because you know how much it's done in the lives of either your kids or yourself, for that matter, your grandkids. And people just go, oh, yeah, I get it.
Well, LisaSTL.org/Annie, we would love the opportunity to include you in this community that we've established here. And it's Spirit Week here on the Annie Fry Show, so we're dressing like each other. So you're going to go. It's not just about the lipstick. You're gonna dress like me.
I'm still not putting on lipstick, but I have a great costume. I have encapsulated you perfectly.
You've encapsulated me perfectly.
Yeah.
We'll see about that next on the Annie Fry Show.